Welcome to the podcast that's all about solutions. If you're tired of complaining about tyranny and you want to take action to create a freer world, this is the place for you. Join us as we ask, what then must we do? I am here today with Christy Yap. Christy is a Substacker. Her Substack is called On This Day Last Year, 6 Months of Turbo Cancer. And I'll let Christy introduce herself and tell us, you know, where she's coming from and everything. But I am just so impressed with your Substack. It's something that I feel is so needed. It's something I have thought about. Gosh, I should be, you know, writing all this stuff down and preserving it and having this account. And I just, you know, haven't done that. And I'm sure there are a lot of other people out there too. But what it reminds me of is Solzhenitsyn's account of the gulags of the Soviet Union, of just his, and you know, the details, the very personal details. And I just feel like this is so, and I'll let you explain, you know, what it is I'm talking about here, but I feel like this is something that's so needed, so desperately needed right now in this point in our history. So thank you. Thank you for doing it. And thank you for being here. And let's just start off by, if you could just introduce yourself a little bit, tell me about your background and
what makes me feel so overwhelmed. I'm not that great. And coming to write this is not a plan I ever had. It's not something I intended to do. I didn't intend to be a writer. So I guess to tell who I am, I'm going to go back to before my mom got sick. I'll go back to when COVID started, which is when the world just completely changed. And it changed in the weird ways that it changed in the beginning, where suddenly we all went home to go to work and, you know, but, and suddenly we were all like in it together. Remember that?
Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Long time ago. Yeah. So I was for 30 years an early childhood educator. I had been a nanny. I had been an aide in a preschool classroom. I had been a preschool teacher. I had been the director of a daycare center. I had then become a certified teacher. I was a preschool for all teacher for the state of Illinois, which is the Illinois, you know, preschool program funded, state funded preschool program. And I could talk about that in another interview, to be honest. And then from that job, I moved up. I was very good at my job. I'm smart. I was passionate about the work that I was doing. I felt very strongly that, and I still do, that those early childhood years are the years that we are failing. And that's like the problems that we see now. It all starts there. And I could talk about that for hours. But I moved up, and it was because of that passion that I was able to move up in the agency. I became what was called a teacher coach. If I get knocked off, it's because the earphone falls out and then I touch it and it shuts me up, but I'll be back. So I became what was called the teacher coach. I worked for an agency called Illinois Action for Children. It's a very large agency that oversees the early childhood education programs throughout the south suburbs of Cook County, Illinois. That's a big thing. It's a Goliath, and a very political thing. Mm-hmm. So I moved up in that. I learned in those couple of years how political it really is, how ineffective it really is. And I started to see some of the reasons why that was, because I was in the administration role. But in my heart, I was always a teacher. And I loved the teachers. I loved working with the teachers. That's what I did. I trained teachers. And I felt very good in that role, too. I felt like that was also important, because they're the people that are building the foundation of society for real. You know, if you mess kids up between the ages of birth and 5, you messed up a whole person. That's it. You know, their brains don't develop right from then. They don't get it back. So that's what I was doing. And then COVID hit. So I continued to be a teacher coach, but I was doing it all online. I was doing it from my living room, which was really weird. It was a weird, weird situation. So I worked in very poor school districts, some of the poorest in that area. And what ended up, at first we were all at home and we were trying to figure out how we would give school to 3, 4, and 5 year olds through a computer, which is just
bonkers.
And when you're 3, 4, and 5, everything's supposed to be hands on. Everything is about their social emotional development. Everything is about them interacting with other kids in positive. That's what you're supposed to do. And this is just the opposite.
Yeah.
And then we start talking about the things we needed to put in place when the kids would come back into the classrooms. Again, everything we were talking about was literally the opposite of what childhood is supposed to look like. Already being in these group home situations for young children is the opposite of what childhood is supposed to look like. We were trying to work within that all these years. One of the big problems we see today can go back to that, just that idea that you take the kids away from the family and put them all in a group.
Yeah.
Let them fend for themselves and see how it works out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which happened around the 60s. So I was working online. We were making these plans. So then when the kids came back into the classroom, all kids ages 2 and up were going to be masked.
Wow.
All teachers. I was starting to talk about, like, that doesn't really make sense because that's when they're learning to speak. So obviously this is going to lead to some problem down the road. But I was talking to the air, you know, and I was in my living room talking to a computer literally all the time. It was so weird. And my boys, I have boys who are teenagers, they're bigger now, but, you know, they would come in and just say, your job is so weird. I was like, I don't know. But then, oh, other things we were talking about. So, like, the kids weren't going to be allowed to touch each other. The kids weren't going to be allowed to share toys. The teachers weren't going to be allowed to hug the kids. And how were we going to make this happen? And that's what we were talking about. That's what we were planning. Like, we could put hula hoop on the floor and the kids sit inside the hula hoop to play. And then their toys inside their hula hoop are their toys and they can't. But that's not what we're supposed to be teaching kids at this age. So, you know, the long-term implications of this, we're still going to see all that. I mean, that's what happened. That's what ended up happening. Oh, sorry. Then the teachers in these poor school districts went back to the classrooms while the administrators stayed in their homes and observed them. My job was to sit in my living room on my couch with my dog, my feet up, and watch teachers in these classrooms struggling because these kids were, I mean, all of it was unnatural, and then judge them. Like, right. How weird is that? So to me, I was just like, it just kept getting weirder and weirder. I didn't understand it. I was arguing about it.
You're the only one.
None of it was working. Clearly it was never going to work.
Was anybody else, like you mentioned that you were saying, well, this is kind of crazy and this is nuts. Was anybody else asking those questions?
No, I literally, close to the end of all this drama that I caused, we were in a meeting. It was an administrative meeting. The mandates were then at that point, all this I was saying before was before the mandates even came into it. Mm-hmm. We were then mandated to be vaccinated. All these teachers who had risked their lives and gone back to work while we sat, you know, they're going to be then fired. Of course, I was upset about all of that too, because, you know, got to save the world, whatever. But the mandates were already in place. I had applied for a religious exemption. I did not get any response, actually, for 76 days from my application till the day that I was told I would be fired for it. And I was in this meeting, and I don't know, we were talking about the kids and the masks and the COVID. And I said in the meeting of administrators for this program for at-risk youth of Cook County, Illinois. Oh my goodness. I said, you know, I just read a statistic that more children have died this year in Illinois of gunshot wounds than of COVID, far more, far more. And I said, so it just seems to me, if you, we really wanted to protect the kids, we'd be getting them Kevlar vests, not men. And I was told I was going down a rabbit hole. But it was true. It's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a county where children shoot each other over gym shoes and stuff. That's what happens there.
Yeah.
But I was going down a rabbit hole. Like, it doesn't, that doesn't exist. You know, it's this weird thing, you know.
We don't talk about it.
Yeah. So I was like, yeah, it was basically, that's how that was the response I would get. And it was just, you know, we had to please the funders. That became very clear. Mm. If we don't follow these rules, we were both state and federally funded. We had both Preschool for All for Illinois, and we had federally funded Head Start programs, and we had combination programs. Mm-hmm. Big thing. But it was all about the funding, the funding, the funding, the funding. We have to follow. So the state of Illinois says we have to do all these things. The federal government says we have to do all these things. We have to do all of these things. It doesn't really matter how all of these things affect the kids or right. the teachers or the communities. We just had to do that because of the funding. And I mean, and you know, and then like, I'm sitting there like, well, my eyes are open now. So then the whole vaccine thing came, you know, I waited and waited, waited. And then I got an email saying, and this was January of 2021, it had been 76 days. I received an email from HR saying, your last day of employment here at Illinois for Children will be, it was 2 weeks, the 21st from that day, unless you come and show us your vaccine.
Wow.
Which, you know, like I wasn't going to do. And they had waited long enough for me to really, 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 really look into it.
Yeah.
And at that point, like, well, no, I wasn't going to do it. If you had told me no 76 days ago, maybe you would have had a chance, because it was not as, it was like, maybe it's going to be fine. It seems weird. But so then I talked to my immediate supervisor. I said, listen, I was just told I'm going to be fired. She knew it might be coming too. I was like, I told people. And I said, so I'm thinking I'm just going to use my time off and just take off the last 10 days. She said that would be unprofessional. So she said to me, she said, I need you to put your notes in, like, I need to put my notes in the system. And I was like,
wait a second.
And I was an extremely good employee. I did like a lot. So that night, I wrote an email. And I was a good writer even then. So I wrote an email. I, because I was an administrator, was able to email everyone in this entire agency. Not everybody could do that, but I could. Mm. So I wrote an email about saying, you know, that my last day would be that day, and I wanted to explain why. I explained my reasons I didn't want to take the vaccine. I talked about the fact that I waited all, you know, and on and on and on. And then in the morning, and I sent it. I sent it to everybody. So then in the morning, I started getting responses. Mm-hmm. And people were saying, I didn't want to take it either, but I'm a single mom. I was worried about my job. Other people were saying, I haven't taken it yet. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't have anything else lined up. So these emails are coming through. Other people are like, well, I took it, but, you know, you're brave or whatever. And then all of a sudden, so I was on my work computer in my house. It's the work Illinois Act for Children desktop that I'm working through. It just all went out. Like it all was shut down. I couldn't access the email from my phone. I texted my immediate supervisor, like, I all of a sudden can't get in stuff. And she's like, well, I don't know why that would be. And then the next day she called me and said, why aren't you in the meeting? And I was like, well, I can't access anything. I don't know what you're talking about. She said, check your personal email. So I checked my personal email and they had sent me an email saying to come to this meeting, which was an HR meeting. That so in my living room from my home, I was fired. I was told I was going to be paid through the 21st, which was the day that I would have been fired for the vaccine. Anyway, they didn't want to see my face no more.
Mm.
That was that. And then I went and worked at this tiny daycare just in the town. I knew the people who owned it. It was actually, it was crazy. Everything built up to that, right? It was such a buildup, like the whole thing, like the whole society was building up. Mm. And then I did it and then I got fired and then like it was over.
Hmm.
I was just like, well, okay. Very few people that I worked with reached out to me. You know, I had been there 15 years. So that was kind of my whole, so it's like being shunned.
Yeah.
A few people reached out to me and I will admit that like I was then very defensive also. So I was kind of like, you know, but it was very few. And
wow.
It's like, it's like my whole other world now. So that all happened. Then I went to work for this little daycare center. I had been just researching the vaccine like crazy, though, leading up to that point. I had been, of course, like a lot of us were, trying to convince people not to do it, trying to post things. You know, it was just, and everybody wouldn't listen. So that's the other reason I probably wasn't hearing from people anymore, but just emotionally. Crazy. So I went and worked at this tiny little daycare in my town. I knew the people that owned it. They weren't asking their employees to take the vaccine. It was in a church. They're very nice to the kids. It was small groups. So I went and worked there. So that was January. I got fired. I went and worked there until my mom got sick. And it was nice there. There's things I could talk about there too, but we'll move on. And then all of a sudden, just my mom texted me one morning. My mom was super healthy, always super healthy. Like,
yeah, I've seen it. And
she
so
would,
for anyone who doubts that, you know, look at the pictures that you've posted on your Substack. I mean, this is a woman who looks like she was in amazing health for, she was like in her 70s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just very active, very fit. You know, her face looks like very alive and energetic, and her eyes are sparkling, and you know, she just looks great.
she was like, and I'm not exaggerating. Her diet consisted of fruits, organic, fresh fruits and vegetables, a little bit of lean meat, a little bit of fish maybe, mm-hmm. and she would eat a yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
And then she would have a little bit of milk in her coffee. And she was very controlled about these things. She would not eat sugar. She wouldn't taste your dessert. I mean, she was like, I'm not being rude. I don't eat it.
Yeah.
Like, it's as if she was allergic. She just, nope. And she every single day went to water aerobics. The first year of COVID, every single day she came out and we walked my dogs together. She was working in her garden every single day. She went and swam laps in the summer when the community pool was open. And like, if you said to her, you know, it's time to start a garden, she would come to your house and start digging up things and showing you what, I mean, like she never stopped. She had so much energy. And then all of a sudden, so the day before she got sick, she had gone to my Aunt Lenora's house, which is an hour away, drove herself there. They went out shopping. They did this and that. They spent over an hour walking around the big Costco. And then she drove herself home. By the end of that day, she had said, you know, maybe I pulled a muscle because something kind of hurts.
Mm.
The following morning, she texted me and said, I'm going to go to the emergency room. I've got this pain in my groin and now I've got this lump. Mm. So the day before it started to hurt, then she's got this lump. And so there was a lump, you could see it, you know, and it was hurting her. So we went to the emergency room and I mean, you could read the book, but at first they were saying it was nothing. Then they said they did a scan. They were thinking it was constipation. Then they said they saw some swelling of her pancreatic duct and her bile duct, which indicates possible pancreatic cancer. Then they did an endoscopy and said she absolutely did not have pancreatic cancer. Her pancreatic had no cancer in it whatsoever. But then when stuff happened, they ended up biopsying this lump, which just continued to grow and grow and grow. Like, it was unbelievable. You could just see it being bigger every day. It was like a mushroom. It just grew and grew. So they took that out and biopsied it, and it was filled with pancreatic cancer cells.
So not in the pancreas, but like down in her groin.
On the opposite side of her body. Yeah.
Yeah.
And when they were looking for pancreatic cancer, they were saying that this groin over here couldn't be related to anything with the pancreas. They kept telling us that at first because it was distant. If the pancreas was going to affect the lymphatic system, it would be the lymphatic system on the side of the body where the pancreas is. That's what the doctors were saying. This was impossible. And then it happened.
So were they just incompetent, or is what your mom had something? Is it just so new? Did cancers not behave this way in the past?
Cancer did not behave this way in the past. I mean, based off of everything I've read, off of the research I've seen, off of everyone else's anecdotal stories, my mom had cancer because her immune system shut down because of the COVID-19 vaccines. Mm. You know, there's enough research to support that.
Yeah.
People can question it. I guess, of course, anything is possible. But when you read my mom's story, you see that, like, over and over and over, what was impossible just kept happening to her body. Mm-hmm. So something had changed. And that's happening to people other than her.
Yeah.
She's not the only one. So
how long before this showed up, how much time had passed since she'd had the vaccine?
She got her vaccines right in the beginning. I have the dates. I have her paperwork. But the first ones were in 2020. And then she got two more in 2021. Mm. And so then the pain in her groin was in June of 2022.
Okay.
So it was about 9 months, I believe, after her most previous vaccine. Mm-hmm. Now, her first vaccine she got, the side effect she got was pain in her groin on the same side.
Mm-hmm.
Pain so bad that she ended up spending that day in bed. She couldn't get up. She thought at that time that she had pulled a muscle or something. She at first didn't put it together with the vaccine because, like, that would be like, how would that be related? But then her doctor told her that is a possible side effect.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I don't know. The second time she got the vaccine, she was at her friend's house. They were talking and she just passed out.
Wow.
And then she was put on an EKG. Her heart was fine. Mm-hmm. You know, they did some tests. They found nothing wrong with her. She went on. So to me, the vaccine was doing something to her each time. I'm sure it was, you know, progressively worse. On her boosters, she didn't tell me if she had had any side effects. But, you know, by that time, we were at odds over the whole subject. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it got to a point where it's like either we don't talk about it or we don't talk, you know.
Yeah.
So.
So reading your descriptions, one of the things I really like about your Substack is that this is a hard thing to read. You know, if I read more than a few of them at once, it's upsetting. And it can just be really hard to go into the details and the mire and everything. But you do it in these little bite-sized pieces. And that's a lot easier to handle. So I read the beginning posts, and then I've just read, you know, I don't necessarily read it every day, but I've read a lot of scattered posts. And a big part of the story you're telling is about the healthcare system itself and about how people are treated. Could you say a little bit about that? Like, what did you learn about how the healthcare system treats people?
What I learned is how little people matter there. And this My husband says I have like a talent for making small things seem very big, but they are very big when somebody is so sick. Mm-hmm. So my mom and I would go to her chemo appointments, right? And they were always on Fridays. And my mom was so very sick. It was just difficult. It was difficult to get her from her bed to the bathroom. She was within 2 weeks before she even had a diagnosis, before they even said that this was cancer, she was completely debilitated.
Wow.
With pain.
That's so
completely
fat.
Couldn't walk on her own anymore. Couldn't do anything. And at that time, they were at first just giving her Motrin, just like they acted like, and I would say, my mom eats really healthy and she does all these things. And you don't seem to understand that she, you know, because they would just treat it like, they were treating it like, this is just what happens to people.
Mm.
Like, you know, the American diet just causes, and then, but she doesn't do that, those things.
Yeah.
But so we would go to these chemo appointments, and their rules were you had to show up for the appointment, because a lot of people don't show up for their chemo appointments. And I imagine it's because they get too sick.
Yeah.
But, you know, we wouldn't want to waste money based off of that, right? So a lot of people don't show up all the time. So they don't want to mix the drugs in advance. And they said to me, because these drugs are very expensive. They also do have a shelf life, but they said to me, because they're very expensive. So you come to the appointment, then you're there. They don't start mixing the drugs because you're there, though, because you've sewn up, because they don't want to end up sewing them away just in case something goes wrong. So you get there, and then we would see the doctor, and she would look at test results, because we would have to come a day in advance and get a blood test. And all of these things were just hard to do. And I'm not complaining about that. It's just there was such lack of consideration for the fact that these things were hard to do. And the only option that they gave me was to put my mom into a home, which she didn't want. And I didn't want for her. I knew she was dying. I didn't think this was a temporary thing. And she wanted to die at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, and it was all moving very fast, and home health is a thing, but it was like, it was all moving so fast and they were all understaffed, and it just never really came together and happened where the home health could come and draw her blood for her. That's supposed to be a thing, but
yeah,
it just, everything was so chaotic all the time. And they were, everybody was understaffed. And I know that's part of the problem. It wasn't like the doctors and the nurses and the receptionists were all mean people. You know, they weren't all evil or something. The system is evil. The system is very corrupt. And you had some, there were some assholes that we met. And I mean, there was some really cruel people.
Ugh.
But for the most part, they seemed to be nice enough people who were just stuck in, just they have no control and there was nothing they could do about it. This is just the way it is.
Yeah.
And that's how it was. They were just like, well, it's just the way it is. So there you go. But there were little things. You know, there's just little things. So we would go there. We would see the doctor. Then she would look at all the tests, make sure everything's fine, see my mom, talk to her. Then she would clear her to have the chemo drugs mixed. So this hospital system, which was University of Chicago Hospital System, which was in the south suburbs, so it's a south suburban of that hospital, which we went to because of their reputation. You know, when we thought, based off of the pictures on the website, that we were going to have a lovely experience. They had one pharmacist at that time, because they were short staffed, working out of three separate locations. And these three separate locations were in three separate towns in the south suburbs.
And
so it was about an hour drive for him. So there was a courier, and he would have to go take these drugs to three locations. So the pharmacist was in one location mixing drugs. The courier was constantly driving. And then when he would get back to the pharmacist, he would pick up the next batch and then drive to all the locations again. So just usually we waited about 2 hours for the drugs to arrive.
And she's in pain this whole time.
She was in pain. She was just so sick. She was dizzy. She was nauseous. And my mom, she's tough. I mean, she didn't really complain, but just, and, you know, it's kind of, well, if you want treatment, this is the way it is. So then finally it would be time for her treatment. And we went to actually 3 different places for chemo. By the time we got to the third, she was just like, well, it's not going to be great anywhere. So, so in the third place where she finally just went for the rest of them, we went into the room and they said that the room was too small. It's where they have several people getting infusions in one room. There's chairs. Mm-hmm. So visitors had to wait in another room. My mom's infusion took 1.5 to 2 hours. There's people in there having infusions for 8 hours.
Oh, man.
And then they would say to me, you know, you can leave and just come back and pick her up. And I don't know. It might be me having been a preschool teacher. I'm a little like, leave. She needs constant supervision.
Well, but when it's a loved one, when it's someone you love,
yeah,
they're suffering.
Yeah. And I'm
so like, just leave them there.
Leave her. And I was just somehow so connected to her. I just was like, I can't leave her side. Be like, what if she has to go to the bathroom? And it was literally like that, though, because if she had to go to the bathroom, she would need help. What if the nurses are busy, which they usually are?
Yeah.
You know, if you, and when you're in the hospital, you push that button, you might wait 2 hours.
Yeah.
And if you're, so another 1.5 hours, we would be there. So it was, you know, usually a 4-hour visit.
Jeez.
But on top of that, because we were there on Fridays, Friday was the day that the fabulous pharmacy reps would come in and bring these extravagant lunches for the doctors and their staff. So they would come through with bags from Bona Beef, you know, whatever they're bringing. They would go in this room to the side, set this all up, the staff, and I'm not blaming them because they work hard and everything. They would go and get their plates and they would come and eat. But you had this room full of sick people who were never offered food. And there was plenty. There was so much. And I said, I was like, you know, I'm pretty sure the insurance is paying for that food, for all these drugs they're about to. But, you know, it was like we were not there.
Right.
And that's how it felt. We're not that important in this whole thing. It is what it is. You just got to sit there. Sorry. You know, I mean, it wasn't the receptionist's fault. I can't say like, yeah, she was a bitch. And there's nothing she could do about that. They just had to say, well, we're doing our best we can, but we're going to enjoy our lunch too.
Yeah.
And I don't think they were even thinking about it in that way, but.
Yeah, it's got to be disorienting.
Yeah. And I think I've been disoriented, but I think our whole society has been disoriented.
Yeah.
Having had so many experiences with young children, I've studied a lot about brain development. And because when children are young in those 3, 4, and 5 year old years, their brain is only capable of working from an emotional place. They're starting to develop the ability to think reasonably, to consider things from someone else's point of view, to share with somebody else, to think, well, if I take this, he'll be upset. You know, that's starting to develop. They're learning those skills at that age.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get upset about something and they're completely emotional, they lose the ability to be rational.
Mm-hmm.
You have to calm them down first, right? They're not, you can't be yelling to them. You have to share it and them understand it. First we calm down. When COVID hit, that's how everybody started acting.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And in early childhood terms, you call it that they flipped their lid. So this is your brain. You're in this emotional state. So your brain has these connections that go back and forth across the top here, right? And the emotional part of your brain is right here in the middle. When you're emotional, you flip your lid, you cut off those connections. You have to get that back down. And it was such a critical point, because those of us who were seeing this vaccine as a threat were desperate to get other people to see it as a threat too, because they were lining up.
Yep.
They were getting it in that moment, and we were coming at them with all the logic in the world.
Yeah. And it was,
but
like
they were in this emotional state. They couldn't see it. And then this was demonstrated to me very clearly while my mom was sick. There were people who were very close in our lives who were in absolute denial that this was happening. And I realized that their denial had to do with the fact that if they accepted that all this crazy stuff was going on, they would have to take that next step and accept that something happened to cause it. And then they might have to accept what that thing is. And that is just a complete threat to the reality that they're living in.
Yep.
And I believe that was all intentionally done to people. It's not their fault. But when I started writing on Facebook, I was very angry at some of those people. And I think I've thought a lot about, why did I do this? Like, it's not a thing like that I do. I'm not the kind of person that goes on Facebook and tries to put my sad life up, you know, just what, I don't know. So part of it was for those particular people that actually did live through with me, I was kind of trying to point out to them what just happened here and to figure it out for myself. But I did it. And, you know, some people who I was mad at, I was a little bit writing it at them at times, I will admit. It is very emotional. And when I am now, it's easier the second time around. I wrote this. I don't know if I explained this yet on the podcast.
So it started out as Facebook posts?
Yeah, it started out as Facebook posts. So the day, 1 year after my mom got sick, well, 1 year after the day before my mom got sick, I put a post on Facebook that said, on this day last year, my mom was healthy. Mm-hmm. So by this time she had died. She had died 6 months earlier. Okay. So on June 11th, 2023, I said, on this day last year, my mom was healthy. And then on June 12th, 2023, I said, you know, on this day last year, I got this text. And then I just kept going.
Yeah.
And I never missed a day. I just kept going. And so I had my mom's calendar. I have my mom's journal. I had, while my mom was sick, I was making posts on Caring Bridge online. So I had all of those posts. I had taken notes when I was talking to doctors. I have medical records. I have text conversations between my mom and I, and I have my memories. So each day, each morning during 2023, I would get out of bed. I would go and get all these things. And I did it day by day. That's the first time I ever read my mom's journal too, was on those days. Wow. I couldn't pick it up. And then,
yeah,
I was like, well, okay, you know, there it is. And so I'd read the journal, I would read my stuff, and I would remember how that felt, and I would just write it on Facebook. And now it's the second time through. So now I'm going back and taking those same posts, but I am updating them. I'm writing them better, style-wise, grammatically. I actually thought they were really a lot better the first time I wrote them, and now I'm like, that doesn't even make sense. I was very emotional the first time. Happening. I was very emotional the first time I wrote it, and it kind of does show. So I think it's better written this time, but it is still hard. Less hard, you know, and I got really depressed the first time that when I was writing it. I got to a point where I really couldn't be around people much other than my own family. There were people who I knew were reading it on Facebook, and it felt so strange to me to go and see those people then in person.
Mm.
Like, I was like, it was just
Did they?
And that actually happened to me recently, but I took it a little bit better. It was a surprise because there's a lady I didn't really know who had seen on Facebook that I was writing on Substack and then told me, oh, I read your story about your mom. And I was like, oh, and I know that there's people that I don't know that are reading the story. Somehow it's easier that it's people that I don't know.
Yeah.
Than it is when it's people that I do, because it is very much just, but you know, it's also that we see so many numbers. You know, this whole thing has been reduced to the number of people. And that started with COVID, with the ticker tape things on the TV. It was 22 people today. It was 24 people tomorrow, you know. And now it's still that. It's still like the excess deaths are percentages.
Mm-hmm.
The excess deaths are, you know, 22,000.
Yeah.
But each of those really affected people. And I'm told that I'm very good at writing my emotions. And I think that that's what needs to be remembered. You know, because it's all being just left under the rug as if, like, oh, well, you know, everything's fine now. It's over. We're fine.
Well, and even, you know,
even
the folks on our side, you know, even, I mean, there's a lot of great work being done on the excess deaths, on the turbo cancer, on, you know,
mm-hmm.
a lot of great journalism and science being done to sort of pull together what happened and, you know, show with evidence, hey, this is what happened. But there's something missing. You know, when you're just talking about the numbers, you know, it's not as impactful. It can, you know, you can say.
And all of us now are in this state of grief. Everyone is losing people. We've all lost something. I don't think maybe somebody who lives off the grid in the forest away from society, their life hasn't changed at all. But most of us.
Yeah. Something big.
Lost. Yeah. Something significant in our lives. And, you know, even losing my job required me to grieve. Mm-hmm. And I realized that later, like, so grieving the stupid job, you know, I went through the anger. I went through the sadness. So it's all these things. And
yeah,
I feel like that's part of it because that's so, can't think of the word. It's, you know, you just, it's hard to get up and fight, get up and keep at it when, you know, just feels like we lost so much. But
mm-hmm.
I'm starting to feel like that fight again. And I think more and more of us are.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, some of us were fighting early on, and you get to a point where it's like, well, where it is, you do feel sort of defeated because
mm-hmm.
it's like it doesn't make a difference. And, you know, you're, like you said, you know, you're giving all this information to people. You're trying to help them. You're saying, hey, you really should think twice before taking this. And you're just, it really was like, it was like a wall came down between people and there was no breaking through that. It's like you say, it's going.
And people who were reasonable the day before.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly. It's like something so big changed that it's hard to grasp. And you start feeling like, well, there's nothing I can say that's going to make a difference then. There's, you know, what's the point of bringing this information? What's the point of making posts or talking to people? It's not going to get through. And so you
right. start just take care of my own family.
Right. And that's just that's kind of a depressing place to be. It's, you know, if you feel like you can't have any kind of impact, you know, it's, but I do.
And then after my mom was sick, to me, it felt like I would be cruel to say to her,
right,
you did this to yourself, you know, but that wouldn't be what I was saying to her. What I would be saying, and at that time, there were these things about ivermectin. I did try to get her into an ivermectin trial, but it was like I had to try to do it behind her back because I couldn't say I thought it was the vaccine, you know,
right,
which was so stupid, right?
Yeah, but you're not going to say
that.
That's just.
Yeah, it felt cruel. It felt like that would be so mean to say, but like, it's all I talked about was the vaccine, the vaccine, the vaccine. And as soon as my mom got sick, I just stopped talking about it.
Yeah. But what are you
going to do? But yeah, get some ivermectin and sprinkle it on her toast. I don't know. Yeah. And at the time, I was like, I don't even know where to get it. I don't know. It was so much was going on. But and she's an adult, you know, it's her choice.
Right.
But yeah, that's what I would think was, you know, if I could have convinced her, could there have been, you know, could I have made a difference? I didn't convince her to not take the vaccine. But if I could have, like, what should I have tried? And I realize people aren't waking up looking at the data.
Yeah.
There's something about it that, what was it? There was something I read once about brainwashing, where if you use small statements repeatedly, like safe and effective, you can get in people's brains, you can convince them to believe that will override any data you show them. It's just the way the brain works. It's not a choice that they're making.
Yeah.
You know, and that's when I started, well, you know, maybe they would wake up from an emotional place.
Yeah.
Like, this is what's being done to us. This pain that you feel, you know, because even whether or not you believe it was the vaccine that did it, and I hope I'm wrong. I do. I hope that I'm just crazy. I hope I'm crazy.
Yeah, it'd be great if it wasn't this.
Yeah.
Poison that it seems to be. It'd be great if it was benign. That would be great news.
Yeah, and then it's some other answer. But the other problem is, why isn't the government looking for an answer?
Right.
Why are they talking about all these other things while people die?
That's not a problem. Yeah.
Yeah, why are they acting as if it's not happening?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, unless I'm completely delusional and you don't even exist on my screen, which is also all possible.
Could be possible.
Everything's possible. It seems intentional.
And that's where people don't want to go. I mean, that's
it's hard to look at that. It's hard to see.
Yeah. And it's hard to say it because you know it's going to sound crazy. You know that sounds crazy. But
yeah, and
when you put all the pieces together.
And then to say, oh, wow, I was tricked. Mm-hmm. And I gave that to my kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
I fell for that because that's what it was. I mean, there's a lot of anger between the vaxxed and the unvaxxed. I'm just past that now, I guess. Like, I couldn't be mad at my mom. I couldn't be. She's an incredibly kind person. She wasn't. Whatever happened there wasn't her intentionally trying to be mean to people or trying to be hurtful or, you know.
She was manipulative.
She believed what she was being told. That's all that.
Yeah.
Why? I don't know. And she didn't listen to me. But, okay, you know, that's life, right?
Yeah.
I didn't always listen to her either, to be honest.
Yeah. People were manipulated. And I think a lot of those of us who were, you know, pushing so hard and trying to get people not to take it, I do feel like in our groups, there's a lot of right now, there's a lot of sort of empathy for the people who we were fighting with, you know, the ones we were arguing with. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, you know, we can look back a little bit and say, wow, you guys, you were manipulated. This was
right, because
very sophisticated.
And they're the ones with the poison in their vein.
Right. Right.
You know, they are the victims. We are victims too, but far more than us, which twists the whole, you know, it makes it confusing too, this whole narrative, because they were the people that were in support of the government that pushed this on us, but
they're the ones who've been decimated.
Right. Like, how much sense? So,
yeah.
Then to me, that starts getting into these spiritual realms, like, what is happening here?
Mm-hmm.
And my mom was an incredibly spiritual person. She believed in God. She suffered the suffering by the end.
Ugh.
Just I can remember it extremely clearly. I can just, it was controllable. The cancer spread to her bones. It spread to her spine. And the tumors were growing very fast. So they were fracturing her vertebrae from the inside. So you can imagine. So at the end, she was in a hospital bed at home. It had an air mattress. So it was like she was up on a cloud. So no pressure at all.
Mm-hmm.
She was on fentanyl. She was on Dilaudid. She was on lorazepam, and that was all around the clock. It was every 2 hours, then every 1.5. So somebody stayed awake around the clock.
Mm.
And as long as you didn't touch, she was like an angel on a cloud. She was just so peaceful. But then if you had to move her to change her or whatever, she would just scream.
Oh, man.
It was.
Even with the drugs.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
I mean, they never could control. And the hospice nurses would say, we don't understand how this could be. And I was like, because this is something beyond Earth. And my mom, even in that, at that point, you know, up until the very last days, she would still wake up in between these times and just smile and take people by the hand. And she would just say, I love you. And she would talk about God. She would talk about heaven. And there was just this sense of the spiritual sense throughout the room that is not something I had ever experienced before.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, I mean, this attack, it was such extreme suffering. And I believe that this was an attack that came from an evil place.
Yeah.
And I believe that my mom was not defeated, even though her body was decimated and died.
Yeah.
I didn't feel that when she died. I felt this sense that she was happy. And and I mean, that's how she felt. That's how she felt it would be by the end. She was scared, and up until, you know, she went through a lot of emotions, of course, but I mean, and I think this is a spiritual attack. I think if we hang on to who we are as kind and loving spirits, and we fight back with that, you know, with that energy behind our fight, that is how we win. And I think we need to get out of the system. I think we need to learn alternatives. I'm starting to study, well, for about a year and a half now, I've been studying plant medicine. I'm getting more and more serious about that because I don't want to have to be in that system. I don't want to have to depend on that system. You know, we bought we bought this house on an acre of land in the middle of a cornfield. So we're surrounded by 72 acres of corn. We have 1 acre in the middle of it. We know nothing about farming. We're going to start our garden. You know, we're going to start growing food. We're going to get some chicken. Maybe one day we'll have a goat. My goal is to become self-sufficient. I think that's what we need to all be working towards now.
Absolutely.
That's how we fight that system. We just have to not need them anymore. They're selling us poison.
Yeah.
In every way. You know, you go stand in the, I was in the grocery store the other day just reading labels and
I'm serious.
Putting things back. I'm thinking, because even a can of olives has a chemical in it, you know, just, and I'm thinking, well, now what, we just can't buy things anymore. You know, it's like once you start to see it.
And now they're spraying a peel on all the fruits and vegetables and they won't even tell you if it's on it or not. It's like, yeah, we really do. We have to.
They hate us.
Yes.
They hate us.
I mean, that's. Just what it looks like more and more. We need to wrap up. I feel like we could go on for like another few, maybe I'm if you're up for it, I would love to have you come back and like talk about
this.
Yeah,
I would love to. A lot. Great.
Yeah, this has been really, but I 100%.
I'll try to get better headphones.
It worked out. Yeah, thank you so much. This has been fantastic. And I think that's a great note to end on, because, you know, we have been, I agree with you that this is happening, you know, on a spiritual dimension, and we've been through a lot of darkness, and there's still, you can still get sucked down into the darkness. But as with the experience of your mom, you know, if we stay true to who we are, it sounds like, you know, she left this earth with her soul intact.
Yes.
And we can all do that. We can all, you know, stay true to that. You know, there is still light. There's a lot of darkness, but we need to be looking for the light.
Yeah. Shining the light.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much. And I look forward to having you back on again.
Thank you.
You've been listening to What Then Must We Do, the podcast for those who understand that the state is the problem and are seeking solutions. For more episodes, go to brettney.substack.com. That's brettigne.substack.com and subscribe.